I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, we remember Rob Hiasen, who died in the shootings at the Capital Gazette newspaper in Annapolis 1 year ago today. Rob, along with his reporting colleagues Gerald Fishman, Wendy Winters, and John McNamara, and sales representative Rebecca Smith, were killed in the deadliest assault on journalists in American history. My guest today is Rob Hiasen's wife of 33 years, Maria. In the year since her husband's passing, she has overseen the publication of two books by Rob. Float Plan is a poignant and funny novel about a young teacher in Annapolis who is finding his way into adulthood. And Love Punch is a collection of charming and often hilarious columns Rob wrote for the Capital Gazette. Maria Hiasen joins me when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. So most of the Democrats running for president have now made their cases in two nights of debates in Miami. The Supreme Court has ruled against the citizenship question on the census form. The president wasn't pleased, and he's suggested delaying the census. The court also punted the Maryland case about gerrymandering, arguing that federal courts should not second-guess state legislatures, even if they've drawn district lines to benefit a particular party. Here in Baltimore, the Office of the Inspector General reports that a Department of Housing and Community Development employee moved out of state and another moved out of the country, but somehow both remained on the city payroll as full-time employees. And as always, there is much in the news to discuss. And on Fridays here on Midday, we often talk to journalists from around the world in our Midday News Wraps to look behind the headlines. But today, we will instead honor a journalist, Rob Hiasen, the former assistant editor of the Capital Gazette, on the one-year anniversary of the deadliest day in the history of American journalism. It was on this day last year that Rob and four other members of the Capital Gazette staff were murdered in their office in Annapolis. Two others were injured. Rebecca Smith was an advertising sales assistant. Gerald Fishman, Wendy Winters, John McNamara, and Rob were among 54 journalists who lost their lives in 2018 worldwide. Like Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi and more than 30 others, they were specifically targeted because they worked at the Capitol. My guest for the hour today is Maria Hiasen, Rob's wife of 33 years. Maria, a former reporter who now teaches English in Baltimore County, has overseen the publication of a novel by Rob called Float Plan, as well as a collection of columns he wrote for the Capital Gazette called Love Punch. We'll talk about those books, and we'll take your calls and comments throughout the hour. You can join us here on Midday at 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR, and we are streaming our conversation with Maria Hiasen on the WYPR Facebook page. Maria, it's great to see you on this sad day, but I'm honored and delighted that you're going to spend some of it with us.
Thank you. Honestly, I can't envision doing anything else at this hour. It just makes all kinds of sense to honor Rob and his writing, so thank you, genuinely.
So for folks who didn't know Rob, and may not know his writing, introduce us to him.
Well, I like to call Rob a gentle giant, and he liked to call himself more a writer than a reporter. He began in news. We met when we worked in radio. But bravely, in the 90s, he switched over to features writing and got hired at the Baltimore Sun to do features. And he was famous for just getting outside, taking a walk, and finding stories about real people and their lives. And he happens to be the brother, the younger brother of a kind of famous fiction writer that was Carl Hiasen. And certainly through the years, Rob wrestled with, how do I embark on writing a bit of fiction when I got this famous brother? So he did struggle with that. And through the years, dabbled in trying to get some fiction published. Once he became an editor at the Capitol, he did get to fulfill a dream of writing a column. Which he dabbled in between editing that paper. That was sort of an on and off love affair, you know, as time permitted. But He managed to amass quite a few columns and some column-esque writing at the Sun. That's what we've assembled in Love Punch, the book of columns. And Float Plan was the latest iteration of the fiction he had dabbled in. It's been called a love story to Annapolis. It's got a fair amount of him, a little bit of me, and some other quirky things he'd observed in life in that. So he collected string, he wove them into columns, he wove them into the fiction, and he was a lover of words. He truly loved sitting down with those reporters. They would swing on by, as they call it, Rob's desk there at the Capitol, and stay a while just to decide, is that the right word choice? Are we sure this is right? That kind of thing. Teaching is one of the careers that Manny and his family chose, along with the law and writing. I think he was combining a little bit of the thought processes of each of those into his career.
Because he was honored just recently in Michigan with an award called the Clurman Award for mentoring.
Yes.
The work that he did as a mentor of writers.
Yes.
And, you know, he was a word guy, that's for sure.
He was a word guy who loved the youngins, loved what they taught him.
Yeah.
And shared his list of dead words with them.
Right. In 2012, he came up with the dead word list. You know, things like innocent bystander.
Right. I hope they're innocent.
Yeah. I would never want to see a guilty bystander.
Yes.
You know, that kind of, so take this, excise this stuff out of your stories. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
But, you know, he's just adored by, you know, so many young writers. I think of a guy named Tim Prudente, who's at The Sun, who has just won some awards and has written some beautiful stuff. And I think I dropped you a note a week or two ago when I read a piece by Tim, and I said, this has Rob's handwork all over it.
Yes, yeah, yes. Yeah. And Tim has said lovely things about what he learned from Rob. And I do see strands of Rob in Tim's writing, just that less is more, show don't tell kind of.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful to see.
Yeah, and of course, I met you and Rob when my wife, Linnell Smith, was in the features department at The Sun with Rob. Huh. And a number of our, you know, mutual friends, some of whom have gone far and wide, you know, have written beautiful tributes to Rob and have, you know, just organized things. Mike Gray, our mutual friend, who's now a managing editor at the San Francisco Chronicle, came up with the idea of Reading Rob Day. And he's compiled a list or a group of some of Rob's writing. So you go to the hashtag Reading Rob, you can get a sample, and he suggested for all of us who knew and adored him, just read a section of some stuff that Rob wrote. So it's a great idea for this terribly poignantly sad day. Let's talk about the novel first.
Okay.
The novel I found terrific. I really enjoyed it. And as you say, it's show don't tell. It's very spare, and it's funny as can be. And I have not. I will confess, I am not an aficionado of Carl Hiaasen's work. I met Carl just for the first time a couple months ago in an event we were doing together at the Pratt Library. He's a lovely guy, smart as can be. He had some beautiful things to say about Rob, his brother, at the funeral, and he's hysterical. I mean, and he draws on all this slice of life stuff in Florida where he's been camped out for quite a while. But boy, writing under the shadow of this very famous writer who's not only famous but also really funny, that is a lot of pressure. I mean, how did Rob deal with that?
Oh, boy. Well, for a long time, he just wouldn't even try. And I remember days when he would come. I was home with the young children trying to piece together freelancing and then going back to school to become a teacher in midlife. And he would come home just really want to try. But I it's just not worth it. And I'm like, what do you got to lose? And eventually, after hearing that about 50 times from me, he did give it a try. And for more than a decade, he tried to piece together some bits of things he'd observed out covering features in Baltimore and in our lives, dogs, my teaching career, some funny things that happened along the way. And, you know, he would struggle with how not to be too sappy, because Rob could be a little maudlin if he let himself.
Can't we all?
Can't we all? Yes, yes, yes. How to keep that momentum going, you know, because that story arc, you know, there's little arcs within there to keep it going. How to have an ending that's somewhat fulfilling, right? Readers kind of want, but yeah, they're not expecting. So he toiled and toiled and toiled. I write a little bit in the foreword to Float Plan about the process of how he would typically spend a lot of a Saturday, especially in the morning. He'd be in our living room, which is where he had set up a pretty large desk. And I would be in the kitchen, you know, dining room in between us, but he'd be puttering away on his novel. I'd be grading English papers. And then about midday, we'd plan, all right, what are we going to do that's fun? What are we going to do that's chore-wise, you know? And he just kept at it and shopped it. He had folks eyeball his work, give him some feedback. I know his brother Carl did. He was dogged in his pursuit, as they say. And tried to be true to himself and inject a bit of humor in here as well.
And as the book and the column, the collection of columns shows, he was a, you know, trenchant observer of the human passing parade. And did he walk around with a notebook and, you know, in his pocket all the time?
The question is how many?
Yeah. Just every little quirky thing or unquirky thing, or, you know, something that are at least at the moment, perhaps, you know, seemingly banal.
He never stopped. Yeah. Okay. I want to describe, after the worst thing in my life happened a year ago this day, you know, as the weeks proceeded, Rob's briefcase is returned to me. Well, there's a notebook with ideas. My son goes to Annapolis to retrieve Rob's car. There's another notebook.
Yeah.
You know, changing the sheets, Rob's side of the bed. Oh, yeah, right. There's another notebook. Oh, in the slot where he kept his keys, another notebook. Lots of notebooks. And, you know, we had become empty nesters just a couple of years ago. We have a boomerang childhood, moved home, you know, and all that stuff. So we spent a lot of time talking to each other. I was happily married for 33 years. And we would be together in our family room, and I would be recounting some event at school, some silliness. And wait. And he'd reach for, you know, those little things in the New Yorker where you can subscribe or renew your subscription, those little cards.
Yeah,
the
little cards that fall out.
It's like, I got to write that down. I got to write that. Like, he'd just write on any sliver of paper he could find. And then he'd collect them all. And I guess he transferred them to the notebook or got them over to his desk. But he was always in search of that little something. Just that reporter's eye really does enhance fiction.
Yeah.
And I think all kinds of folks who've made that progression could tell you that. You
know? And the characters in this book are lovable, likable, flawed, silly, sort of quirky.
In other words, they're Rob.
In other words, yeah. In other words, all the things that we could say about Rob, exactly. But you know, I remember reading years ago Bonfire of the Vanities, which was this great smash hit book, you know, Tom Wolfe and stuff. And it was a fairly thick novel, and I plowed through the whole thing, and I just hated it. I detested it because nobody in that book almost was likable. I mean, the DA at the end of the book, maybe, you know, but the rest of the characters in that book, they just ticked me off. It's like, I did not want to spend these 2 days of my vacation knowing those people. I would love to know every one of these people that Rob made up in Float Plan. Tell us a little bit about Will Larkin, who's the teacher, the protagonist.
Yeah. Well, I do want to say Will is a lot of Rob.
Mm-hmm.
And to read any of Rob's work really is to know him. Let's just put that out there. But Will is based a little bit on my teaching at Delaney High School, in that he is asked to float. Okay, so my first year at Delaney, I did not have a classroom, and I would load the books and whatnot on a little cart and amble up and down the hall to the rooms that I did teach in. I hated that existence.
Yeah, you didn't have your own room.
Not my own. I invaded other people's. I got a room. Years later, they asked me to consider floating again. I said, no, thank you.
Yeah.
So after I came home with that story, I said, oh, this is good. So Will.
And a reminder that the title of the book is Float Plan.
Uh-huh. Yes,
which
yes.
Has it's like a triple or quadruple entendre in this.
Bingo. Yeah, it's got a hidden meaning there. Yeah. So Will is a math teacher. P.S. Rob hated numbers and math. But Will finds himself thinking everything adds up. There's a formula, just as in math, for everything in life. And his world is upended when he learns that his wife, Terry, no longer wants to be married to him. And he is livid. He is furious. Also found out that he doesn't have his classroom. He is just irate. And so I remember Rob experimenting with, you know, what can be funny but not too over the top, and he deliberated on how to set the scene here. But Will is so frustrated. He's drinking a lot, and around about page 8 in the novel is when he decides, that's it. I am going next door to that family's house with a gazebo, and I am taking it out with a chainsaw. Now, we did not own a chainsaw. I do remember a time or two we rented one from the good old Home Depot to get rid of some excess branches, and Rob really loved doing that. And the neighbor of ours does have a gazebo, but that's the end of
which
the...
Which we should say is still intact.
Yes. That's the end of the verisimilitude. But at any rate, Rob had also heard me talk a bit about teaching and how, you know, you try to be understanding about kids who want the A, but, you know, at a certain point, you know, it is what it is. 89.5 it can be rounded up, but 89.2 cannot. I mean, we have to have rules. So here we have Will, chainsaw in hand, and a police officer is confronting him and says, "Sir, do you want to shut it off?" Will stipulated that, yes, he should turn the chainsaw off. The neighbors reported they saw someone sawing down this gazebo. Does that sound like something you would be doing out here? Normally not, but today is different. Yep. Had him 3 years ago. Billy Snyder. Did not excel in algebra. Caught the kid opening a back window to my classroom so he could have a smoke while I was teaching. Probably had herpes. "I taught you," Will said. "Algebra. 11th grade. Billy Snyder." Deputy Snyder. Oh, Deputy Snyder. And it grows more awkward as this scene progresses. Yeah,
probably had a herpes. You know, it's just, it's those kinds of, you know, beautiful half-liners. They're not even one-liners. They're half-liners. We will come back with more with Maria Hyacin. She is the editor of a collection of essays by her late husband, Rob Hyacin. It's called Love Punch. It's published by Apprentice House Press. It's being released today. There's a launch party for the book at Union Craft Brewery in Baltimore on the 7th of July, and we've got information about that event on our website. Apprentice House has also published Rob's novel that Maria just read a little bit from. It's called Float Plan. Sales of both books benefit the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence and Every Town for Gun Safety. And before we take a break, this quick note again about Mike Gray's idea. He's the managing editor at San Francisco Chronicle, former colleague of Rob's at the Baltimore Sun. He has compiled a selection of stories by Rob, and he's suggesting that on this anniversary of Rob's murder, everybody read some of Rob's work. So go to the hashtag ReadingRob for a link to those stories. We'll take some calls when we come back at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. We're on Twitter, and we are broadcasting, or streaming, rather, on the WYPR Facebook page. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, today we say goodbye to Tony Brandon, who was appointed WYPR's president and general manager when the station was formed back in 2002. Tony has led WYPR from its infancy, and under his leadership, our station has grown tremendously. All of the local programming, the news staff, the HD channels we now have, they were all put in place during Tony's tenure. So we are grateful for his leadership, and we wish Tony all the best in his retirement. And coming up Monday on Midday, we'll introduce you to WYPR's new president and general manager, LaFontaine Oliver. Monday is his first day at the helm of your public radio, and we'll have a chance to meet him and talk about his vision for our station as we enter this new chapter. So LaFontaine Oliver will be with me here on Midday Monday. If you're just joining us today, my guest is Maria Hyacin, the wife of Rob Hyacin, the former assistant editor of the Capital Gazette. Rob was one of five Capital Gazette employees killed in a shooting in Annapolis 1 year ago today. At 2:33 this afternoon, our newsroom here at WYPR and newsrooms across the state will observe a minute of silence in their honor. Governor Larry Hogan has declared today Freedom of the Press Day in Maryland. Two books by Rob Hyacin are now available. Float Plan is a novel set in Annapolis, and Love Punch is a collection of columns. To join our conversation with Maria Hyacin, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. To follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. And you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page as well. Maria, let's go to the phones. We have a former student, evidently, of yours. Alexander is calling from Falston. Alexander, welcome to Midday with Maria Hyacin.
Is that you? Hello? Alex Wright?
Yeah, he knows me.
Hi, Alex.
Sorry, I heard you were coming on in the office, and we always have WIPR on, and I wasn't going to miss the opportunity to talk to you.
Aw, that's so sweet.
So, you know, as a former student of yours, I know you've influenced a lot of people. And, of course, it's a pretty big tragedy in your life, and, you know, you're such an inspirational teacher. I'm just intrigued to see how you are going to go forward with how you help, you know, all these people go. At Delaney, how are you going to help influence the next generation?
Oh, wow. Oh, that's lovely of you to say, Alex. One thing I would say is I could never have predicted I would be in this position, and I could never have predicted how I would handle it. So I want to just preface everything with that.
Yeah, there's no handbook for this.
There is not. And I have stumbled my way through figuring out what is right for me. And what is right for me is continuing to be a teacher. What is right for me is, as I do every year, rereading some of the great novels like The Great Gatsby and The Catcher in the Rye and The Scarlet Letter. I teach American Lit.
And you reread them.
And you have to reread. Otherwise, do you really remember all that stuff and the pages the kids are going to ask you about? And I show up for work. And I guess I would have to say I see more in those novels. And from time to time, this past year in particular, I see that I can guide students to maybe a more nuanced understanding. And I think the best case of that is The Catcher in the Rye, which a lot of people, never liked that. Oh, he's a whitey kid, that Holden Caulfield, you know, what a brat. But it was quite an out-of-body experience in December of this past year to be discussing that and guiding students to a true diagnosis of what's wrong with Holden. And he's grief-stricken over the death of his brother, a death that should not have been. Hey, yeah. I know a little bit about that. So yeah. That was moving. And students have been very kind and said nice things to me about being a role model for strength and whatnot. But honestly, they gift me. I am blessed with some amazing students at Delaney. And Delaney's a school, it's a public school.
It's in Baltimore County, it's for folks who don't know it.
Yeah, you know, the Timonium area. You know, we got some folks who are struggling to make it. We've got some folks who are high flyers doing just fine. It's a slice of America.
You switched from journalism
to
teaching how many years ago?
Let's see. That began. I made the shift in the year 2000.
Yeah.
Yes.
So nearly 20 years.
Yeah. Hard to believe. And I began with middle school at Cockeysville Middle. Did a little long-term subbing at Notre Dame Prep as I graduated and got certified for high school. And then I landed at Delaney. The first year I taught was 06, 07. All three of my kids were there, which was actually a dream. I loved it. That year I was floating. And I thought, hi, Ben.
Yeah, back to float plan.
Hi, Sam.
Yeah, walking down the halls.
Yeah. But the students really do inspire me. And, you know, when you endure a trauma, and let's be honest, that's what this has been for my family.
Of course.
And the four other families and the folks who were there, you know, and not there and feeling guilty about that. I mean, just it reverberates. You kind of need a diversion. And teaching will do that. I don't care what kind of problem you have. If you're a devoted teacher, you walk in that building and they got you.
Yeah.
And
Alex, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
When did you graduate from Delaney?
I graduated back in 2014.
14.
Yeah, a couple years now.
Yeah.
And Alex was remains a talented photographer. At that time, I was still sponsoring the student newspaper at Delaney, which you might infer I took very seriously being a former journalist. And Alex was one of those students who like, hey, could you go get this? Okay, Mrs. Hyacin. Just anything. Jump. Could you do that now? Okay. And that's how we produce an award-winning newspaper for years.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful, Alex, for all you did and for the inspiration you gave me. Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks for that.
I wouldn't have done half these jobs that I got now as a photographer if I hadn't been for the hardline teaching that you.
Where are you working? Where are you taking pictures?
I work for a lot of different people, but today I work up in Falston. I work for a photographer. We work for a lot of different people, like Department of Agriculture and the Maryland Traditions Council.
So you're using your skills. That's great.
Good.
Well, God bless. That's great.
I think my biggest accomplishment was getting some pictures on the Associated Press that made me think of you.
Awesome. Yeah. Yay.
Well, that is a good accomplishment. Yeah. Good for you, Alex. Thanks for the call. So as an English teacher, and I want to go back, first of all, to float plan, because float plan has to do with the teacher who doesn't have, you know, Will Larkin, the teacher who doesn't have a classroom. But it also has to do with several boating episodes that take place in the thing, because a float plan is something that sailors are supposed to file so that folks back on shore know where they are. So there's that entendre. And then there's that sort of, you know, Will is just floating in his life,
right?
You know, because he's nearly 30, I guess, right? He's around 30.
Yeah, Rob struggled with that age thing.
Yeah.
It's tricky to figure out.
Which is, you know, is still pretty young when you get to a certain point in your life, mm-hmm. but it's old enough to know better.
Right, you're trying to get it all locked down.
And chainsawing your neighbor's gazebo probably is not the best idea.
Not the best idea. Yeah, and Rob, Rob was an Aquarian. He loved the water. He loved boats. He had that love affair with boats. You know, we owned two separate times, and the happy day was selling the boat each time.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I'll be honest, I sucked as a first mate. I can't tie knots. I just, you know, I like to ride on a boat. That's pretty much it. So he was handicapped by me. So some of his love of boating shows up there for sure. And Rob loved, amongst the writers he loved Charles Dickens. He loved David Copperfield. And, you know, he talked about giving birth to yourself and trying to figure out who you are and what's the right path. And I think that is showing up in our guy, Will Larkin.
How would you teach float plan?
Wow. Well, it'd be a little tricky with teenagers because their life experience is not so much this stage of life. But I think I would start by, you ever just been rocked by some unexpected turn of events? Let's talk about that and how you went about figuring out what was the right thing to do. And I think I'd get it into, you know, existential lessons and learning and whatnot. I think we'd take it from there.
Yeah.
I think that'd be it.
Let me ask you to read the title essay of the collection of columns that you've collected. These are columns that Rob wrote mostly for the Capital Gazette and a couple of stories for The Sun. Okay. He was at The Sun for, what, 15 years or something?
I mean, something like
a
that.
Good long...
Yes, got me out of Florida.
Yeah.
Thank you, God. Couldn't live there anymore.
this is called Love Punch, which is the name, the title of the book. I mean, and before I have you do that, mm-hmm. I want to just give, because Rob, we talked about, was such a great mentor and writing coach to people. This is one of the great leads of all time. This is from an essay, a column in this book called First Person, The Old Man and the Sea. And it was written in 2013. He says, for many of us, Mother's Day is a time to reflect on all the unsung work fathers do with little thought to their needs, allergies, and nap schedule. Hence, Mother's Day is the ideal Father's Day. And as we know, the word hence doesn't kid around. That's how he begins this essay. I mean, that's just terrific. I mean, every single clause in that paragraph is brilliant. I mean, it's just fun. And these columns proceed, you know.
And there's that little bit of, well, or a lot of bit of self-deprecation going on, even at, because basically saying, you know, I always think it's about me.
Yeah.
And I know it really shouldn't be. But can we laugh about that?
Yeah,
sure we can.
Yeah. But let me ask you to read Love Punch, which is, he wrote in February of 2013.
Yes.
And this is an example of one of the columns in this new collection.
Yes. And I just want to preface this by saying, Rob and I, you know, middle-aged people, you know, trying to figure out the exercise that you can live with, that you'll do with routine. And he chose to order himself a big old punching bag, which we had in the basement. And he enjoyed doing that for a time. And then, well, some things happened. So, all right, here we go. Love punch. You're never too old to be a baby. I'm holding a 42-year-old grudge against a boy in middle school who punched me in the gut for allegedly breaking his love beads. I didn't break anyone's love beats. I was nowhere near his lousy love beats. I just happened to be in the wrong middle school gym at the wrong time. The enemy didn't care. Jeff, I've hunted you on Facebook, challenged me to a fight after school on the handball court. The honor of his love beats was at stake. For those too young to remember love beads, they were colorful beads painstakingly threaded on a necklace and worn by faux suburban hippies who thought Woodstock was just a Peanuts character. Anyway, I remember the fight like it was 42 years ago. Under a chippy South Florida sun, Jeff and I locked arms in a pro wrestling death grip. We grunted. We butted heads. Jeff, at 12, sported a Neanderthal beard comprised of barbed whiskers, smelling faintly of Taco Bell. In our struggle, his facial hair clawed at my baby face. Having never been in a fight, I was unclear as to my next move. I had no plans to hit Jeff. That seemed extreme. I just hoped the fight would expire in a stalemate. Then he hit me in the stomach. My 12-year-old stomach was not unlike my 54-year-old stomach. Flimsy, vulnerable to trendy viruses, and above all, a pacifist. Jeff's blow sent me to the ground, where I struggled to breathe and struggled to reconcile the act of violence committed over an object of love. Was this irony? Coincidence? And would I be able to breathe without the aid of a machine? Jeff smugly walked away, his ape-like arms dragging along the ground, his hairy primal right paw flushed with victory. Or maybe he apologized and rode off on his bike. I really don't remember. The point is, I'm ready for my rematch. Last year, I bought an 80-pound Everlast heavy bag, a speed bag, boxing gloves, and a bag-stand combo. I started with 1 3-minute round, then busted my way up to 8 3-minute rounds with 1-minute intermissions. Since my training began, I've managed to injure my Achilles tendon, elbow tendon, and right wrist without laying a glove on a single animate object. Every night, I lose to a stuffed, swinging bag. Still, I asked my friend, a sports writer, who once trained with the great Roberto Duran, whether I should get in the ring against someone. Are you out of your mind? He said, although he infused the question with colorful words used by real boxers. But I'm ready, I said. No, you're not. I wanted to tell him about Jeff's love beads and how he punched me out on the handball court and how Jeff later served 15 years for assaulting a Taco Bell employee. I made that last part up big time. And how I will finally take my revenge. But I didn't. I felt a little silly. A grown man taking up boxing to redeem himself after 42 years. It's time to start acting my age. It's time to take up professional wrestling.
That's just so great. Love Punch. That's the title column in a collection of columns collected by Maria Hyacin by her husband, Rob Hyacin. We're talking about Rob Hyacin on this terrible day, the anniversary of the shootings at the Capitol Gazette last year in Annapolis. Our number here, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. A name you may remember, Vita Roberts from The Evening Sun, which is one of the editors that Linnell and Rob work with. She used to refer to finishing an essay as needing a gentle dismount. You know, sometimes you get a really good idea, you get going, but boy, it's tough to figure out how to leave. And you mentioned that Rob struggled with that in the novel, too. Like, how should I end this? You know, does everything wrap up just all beautiful and everybody sails off into the sunset happy? Or is it more plausible than that?
Right.
And he came up with I think, the right suggestion. But boy, it's one thing to get the idea, but it's another thing to shape it and really know, you know, it's time to take up professional wrestling is perfect, you know? It's
like... And so true, by the way. There are little touches of truth in this. I love in that last or penultimate paragraph when he makes up a little something about the guy assaulting. Rob was known for, I called it the Hyacin hyperbole. When he told a story, he liked to exaggerate. And that was just a little nod to that
yeah.
truth that he had did that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he and I would talk about, you know, we were kids, Saturday afternoons. You know, when you didn't have cable, there would be this god-awful wrestling on with these names that I saw in North Carolina, the same guys he saw. And, you know, we could laugh about, you know, the silly things they did. And he had a mean half Nelson he could whip up or whip out on Ben or Sam or Hannah, our kids, you know, just in teasing. And they loved it. They loved doing that stuff with him.
I remember talking to Frank DeFord one time.
Oh.
Who, you know, filed all these stories for Sports Illustrated and all this, and then did a weekly thing for NPR forever, right? And I asked him if that was really hard to deliver that kind of equality week after week after week. And he said the hard part was the idea. He said, once I got the idea, it sort of usually wrote itself fairly quickly. But boy, the idea was tough. Was Rob one of those folks who struggle with the ideas? Because he's got a whole bunch of really good ones
yeah,
in here.
Yeah,
there's one
yeah.
about Emotions Anonymous or something,
right,
which is hysterical.
Right. Which you can Google, and there really is an Emotions
yeah.
Anonymous.
Yeah. I mean, who knew? But it's like, and this is about the guy who hogs the pound cake at the Emotions Anonymous meeting. I mean, that's a great premise, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that explains why he had those notebooks everywhere, right? You mm-hmm. know, no idea is too small. It could lead to something. And I think just that one foot in reality, just, you know, having seen something kind of like, and then taking it and putting it into, say, the novel here, or stretching the truth a little bit in the column, that's what he was all about, for sure.
Alange Jacobs writes on Facebook, Mrs. Hyacin, I love you. You are always my favorite grade school teacher. Thank you for developing me into the gentleman I am today.
Oh,
do you remember Alange Jacobs?
That is a name from long ago.
Good
yes,
for you.
Yes.
Well, thank you for that that note, Alange. We are remembering Rob Hyacin today and his colleagues, Gerald Fishman, John McNamara, Rebecca Smith, and Wendy Winters. This is the one-year anniversary of the attack at the offices of the Capital Gazette in Annapolis that claimed their lives. We'll have more with Maria Hyacin when we return. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. And we are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us today, my guest is Maria Hyacin. She is the widow of Rob Hyacin, one of the journalists who was killed on this day 1 year ago at the Capital Gazette in Annapolis. Rob and Maria were married for 33 years, and they have three adult children. Love Punch, a book of essays by Rob Hyacin, collected by Maria, was released today. Rob's novel, Float Plan, was published in September. Rob, along with fellow reporters Wendy Winters, John McNamara, and Gerald Fishman, were killed last year in what remains the single deadliest assault on journalists in the United States. Rebecca Smith, an advertising sales associate, was also killed in that attack. According to the Committee to Protect Journalists, in 2018, the United States ranked fifth behind Afghanistan, Syria, India, and Mexico in the number of journalists targeted and killed. So far this year in the United States, 7 journalists have been arrested, 17 have been attacked, and 8 have been stopped at the border with Mexico. Reporters were removed from the floor of the Kansas Senate. A journalist in Miami had his mobile phone seized by police. President Donald Trump routinely refers to the press as the enemy of the people. You are welcome to join our conversation with Maria Hyacin. Our number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. And you can catch us on the WIPR Facebook page. You have gotten involved as an advocate against gun violence. As we mentioned, the proceeds from these books go towards foundations that are set up to counter gun violence. Here we sit in a city in which, to date this year, 154 people have been killed just in our city, and most of them by gun violence. But you wrote a very moving column about the fact that there has been some progress in this. And, of course, you were put into this milieu of gun violence in a hideous and horrible way. But what's your take on where it stands? I mean, we think about the Newtown tragedy and why nothing happened, and then, you know, there's this tragedy, that tragedy, Parkland, Florida, et cetera, et cetera. What's your take on the status of public opinion about it and as an advocate moving forward?
Okay. Well, I think it's easy to become frustrated and jaded when you see a Congress that is not going to pass anything. The House will. The Senate will not. However, I take inspiration from historical figures who saw their way through the civil rights movement. And I think about Martin Luther King. And I think about his, I believe it was his line, if you can conceive it, you can achieve it. And I think you have to take that long view, which is not to be overly optimistic or idealistic, but say, all right, here are the challenges, these are the obstacles, but let's see where we can do something. And then let's celebrate those victories where we have them. And that's one thing I have to say that attracted me to the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. They're integral in policy work. You don't often hear of them because they're busy in state houses and working on the front lines there. You know, when I first got involved with them early fall, there were 13 states with prior restraint or extreme risk, also known as red flag laws. You know, in other words, a loved one who sees that someone is overly aggressive and threatening can fill out proper paperwork and the authorities can take the guns for a temporary period. It's not seizing guns without any authority, you know. Now there are 14 states. Maryland is one of them. And that is, you know, there are a lot of ironies I can look back on. Maryland had passed that law in April of 2018. Rob and the others were gunned down in June of 2018. The law took effect in October, so, you know, of 2018. There's a bitter irony. Now, the positive is that literally hundreds of folks have seized the opportunity to use that law now. They have reported. Is the data skewed? I don't know enough about that, but we have the law. We can make it work. If it needs perfecting, we should do that. And I see that as a positive. I think, you know, here we are at this anniversary. The Capitol has done some fine work writing stories about the reality of where we are with gun violence today in Maryland and in Anne Arundel County in particular. Chase Cook did a fine story about the fact that, you know what, you can do something. You can actually report to the state police if you suspect somebody of behaviors that might indicate they're about to do something, and then the state police can take it from there. It's as simple as, I believe it's, in fact, I wrote it down. Let me see where I put this. msp.guns@gmail.com. And so if you see warning signs like somebody bullying, threatening to go into a school and blow people away, even though you think they're just, you know, joking around, but you see that, you know, you can take a step prudent just to be sure. And everybody can do that. Everybody can vote based on knowledge, not tribalism. It might take a little effort, but everybody can do that. And that's my hope, that we'll just keep banging that drum of sense, logic.
Countrywide, nationally, our country's had the third straight year of increased deaths from shooting. There were 39,773 in 2017, and that's 1,000 more than we had in 2016. So it's an interesting dichotomy because violent crime and crime in general nationally is trending down, but deaths are trending up from violence. And of course, here in Baltimore, we have a particular problem with that. But it's interesting that you observe that the progress that's being made on this is happening at the state level, not the national level.
Right. And, you know, it takes all the states to start to do this, right? You know, we don't live in a vacuum. Pennsylvania does not have such a law. People travel across that border all the time, right? Virginia doesn't have one. I don't believe West Virginia would either, right? So, you know, that's why groups like that coalition exists. I think we have to be clear about a number of deaths by guns are suicides. And
again, the experts talk about this all the time. We've done a bunch of shows on that. If the guns are available and a person is depressed or a person has, you know,
it's pretty
unstable,
pretty surefire, you know.
Yeah.
And so to make sure that we have rational discussions about things like, you know, it takes this fingerprint to unlock that gun. This is indeed the owner. This is the only person who can operate that gun. If it takes public awareness campaigns so that parents truly are locking up guns so that kids can't get to them, that sort of thing, we need to make them happen. I find myself, as a number of other folks, I'm on a task force in Anne Arundel County looking into, and we have many subcommittees, the various efforts that have been made, what's working, and what could reasonably be discussed, suggested for further study. And I think, again, that's hyper-local, right, county level. I just think that times a zillion is what we need to do. If we can't get Congress to do it at this point, let's find where we can. And let's do something. Because it's a public health issue. You can't look at those numbers and say, oh, yeah, the status quo is just fine. You can't look at that the upwards of 150 deaths here in Baltimore. You can't do that and say it's okay. It's
epidemiologically, it's just...
Right. Let's let our logical minds prevail. Let's ask questions like, why can't the government do studies on gun safety? Why didn't we pass that years ago? Why can't we undo that? Why?
Or something like background checks in which the Congress is clearly not reflecting the will of the people.
Of the people.
Because it's 90-some percent Republicans and Democrats who think background checks are not an infringement on the Second Amendment.
Right.
It's interesting because last night in the Democratic debate, I don't know if you watched any of it, but the a few candidates listed gun control and gun regulation and gun violence as their number one priority. It wasn't the last couple of times around in presidential politics, so it's interesting to see.
And there was Eric Swalwell with his orange tie, for all of that, too. So, it is on radar screens, rightfully so.
Chuck writes us on Facebook, just want to say that I really enjoyed reading Float Plan, and I look forward to reading Love Punch. Again, Float Plan is the novel. Love Punch is the collection of columns. And Adele writes on Facebook, it's inspiring to see and hear someone recover so incredibly from such a horrific life event.
That's very kind.
Does anybody ever recover? Do you see yourself recovering?
Well,
that's an interesting. Rick Hutsell yesterday said, if you're looking for closure with the installation of a monument or a memorial, you're in the wrong place.
No, and I happened to talk to Rick briefly yesterday, and he said, I caught it the worst time. It's like 4 p.m. I know they have a meeting. Rob had notes all over his desk about 4:00 meeting. Don't forget, and I apologized profusely for bothering him. He's like, it's all right. Anything, just trying to get through the day without hitting somebody, because it's a stressful time. And I had breakfast with my son this morning. Ben just turned 30 this spring, my adult son. And we were talking about, how this is. And we will always bear this scar, And I had some acute moments over the year. I remember driving to school one morning in December and going way too fast. I get there obscenely early to beat traffic, my 10-minute commute from where I live. I really hate driving. And I spun out, and I didn't hit anything. And I managed to get in there, and I said, what in the world? I was like, what's happening to me, it was approaching winter break. Now, what teacher or student does not look forward to winter break? Well, this past year, not I, my friends.
Because working is better.
Working is better. Just something I had to get through. And so there have been those time markers along the way. Rob's birthday in February was tricky. And I basically said, okay. I guess, someone asked me, are you one of those people who keeps lists and just likes to problem solve? Lots of people write lists of things they got to do, let's be honest. Or, they keep them on in their memo, whatever, on their phones or anything. And I write lots of little lists and lose them and do what I can. And I don't like to see problems persist. So I've sort of looked at this as, okay, in February, what am I going to do to get through this? And I made a plan to make sure I took some, not all, but some of Rob's clothes to Goodwill. A dear friend, Mika Hopkins, helped me with that, a teacher at Delaney. And I just needed to do that around his birthday to feel like I'm not dumping off stuff in the heat of summer, winter stuff.
And it's kind of a one day at a time.
It's kind of a one day at a time. How does that really help? But it did.
Yeah.
It did.
Well, we are out of time, but I am just deeply honored and grateful for spending part of your time on this very difficult day with us. So thank you so much.
Thank you for helping me.
Maria Hyacin. She's the wife of Rob Hyacin, an award-winning columnist and editor at the Capital Gazette. Love Punch, a collection of columns by Rob, was released today. Maria will be hosting an official book launch and fundraiser Sunday, the 7th of July, 3 to 6, at Union Craft Brewing. We'll have a link to the details at WIPR-midday. We want to thank Bottoms Up Bagels for providing lunch today. They are a small-batch pop-up bagel shop preparing hand-rolled New Jersey-style bagels, house-cured lox, and specialty cream cheeses inspired by traditions of bagel making dating way back to the 1940s. Bottoms Up Bagels offers customized catering packages of all kinds. You can find them at JFX and Waverly Farmers Markets and at bottomsupbagels.com. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a good weekend.